Good afternoon, friends and colleagues. I would like to thank Dr. Evelina and colleagues for the kind invitation, and kindly bear with me for my inability to be with you physically for this presentation. What I would like to do in the next 15 minutes or so is to describe cold coagulation as an alternative treatment technique for cervical intraepithelial neoplasia. Cold coagulation is actually a misnomer. It should be heat coagulation. Actually, the technique uses an electrically heated electrode at 100 to 105 degrees Celsius to heat the cervical tissues, eventually destroying them thermally. I would like to briefly describe the principles of treatment of cervical intraepithelial neoplasia. As we all know, cervical intraepithelial neoplasia occurs in the transformation zone of the cervix. So the entire transformation zone has to be treated for effective treatment. About 95% of the cervical intraepithelial neoplasia go up to a depth of 5 mm in the cervical epithelium. So if one can cover a minimum depth of 7 mm, around 99% of the cervical intraepithelial neoplasia will be adequately covered by treatment. And then ultimately, the patients who are treated with cervical neoplasia have to be kept under follow-up at least once after their treatment in order to ensure the lesion has been cured and there are no recurrences. And again, people with cervical intraepithelial neoplasia are at high risk for invasive cervical cancer in future. So many people would prefer a prolonged surveillance of the treated patients, but at least a single follow-up is necessary, like 1 year after treatment. There are two broad techniques for the treatment of cervical intraepithelial neoplasia. They are broadly grouped as ablative treatments and excision treatments. Ablative treatments are essentially treatments which result in the destruction of the transformation zone. So the methods that we have are cryotherapy, which uses a refrigerant gas like nitrous oxide or carbon dioxide to make an ice cold probe, which takes the tissue temperature down to minus 20 degrees Celsius to minus 60 degrees Celsius, so that the intracellular water is crystallized and results in cell destruction. Electrocoagulation uses electrically activated probes, which again destroy the cervical cells by inducing heat. In cold coagulation, a metallic electrode is heated to 100 to 115 degrees Celsius, which is applied on the cervix that causes thermal destruction. Then laser ablation uses laser waves to destroy the cervical cells. Among this, the equipment is cheapest for cryotherapy. One can buy the equipment for about anywhere between, say, $300 to about $1,500, including the probe and the monitors. For cold coagulation, the equipment costs anywhere between, say, 2,500 euros to around 5,000 euros. And laser ablation, the basic equipment costs between, say, $50,000 to around $500,000. Then larger lesions will require excision treatment, which can be done with an electrically activated loop using the loop electrosurgical excision procedure, what is called as LEAP, or the tissues can be excised with a laser beam. And even larger lesions can be excised with a cold knife. And hysterectomy is rarely used for the treatment of CIN unless there are very specific indications. In order to apply the treatment properly, one should know what is the type of transformation zone that one is dealing with. There are three types of transformation zones you can define. The type 1 transformation zone is the one which is fully visible. And in such a transformation zone, one can trace the squama columnar junction in its entirety, so that the entire squama columnar junction is seen through the colposcope or through the naked eye. So that indicates the transformation zone is fully visible. And lesions occurring in such type 1 transformation zones are suitable for ablative treatment. In type 2 transformation zone, the squamocolumnar junction is only partially visible, so that the transformation zone, part of the transformation zone, is in the endocervical canal. But by manipulating the endocervical canal with a cotton bougie or using an endocervical speculum, the entire squamocolumnar junction could be traced and the transformation zone could be visualized. Such transformation zones are called type 2 transformation zone, and lesions occurring in type 2 transformation zone should undergo excision treatment, preferably with LEAP. Type 3 transformation zone, the transformation zone has gone into the endocervical canal and it is only partially visible even after manipulation. And sometimes you may not even see after manipulation of the endocervical canal. Such transformation zones are called type 3 transformation zone. And again, excision methods are suitable for treating lesions occurring in type 3 transformation zone. So, we will recap a little late the indications for ablative treatment such as cryotherapy and cold coagulation. In low resource settings, the only ablative forms of treatment which are feasible are cold coagulation and cryotherapy. Laser is expensive. So the ablative treatment, the indications for ablative treatment, all these indications should be satisfied. It should be a type 1 transformation zone, as we said already. Squamocolumnar junction is entirely traceable. The lesion involves less than 75% of the transformation zone. That means the lesion involves less than 3/4 of the cervix. There is no evidence of endocervical canal involvement by the lesion. There is no evidence of invasive cancer. And one can direct a biopsy safely before ablative treatment. Before you do the ablative treatment, you take a biopsy punch, a punch biopsy. So now we will deal with cold coagulation. Cold coagulation involves treatment of cervical intraepithelial neoplasia using a metallic probe heated to 100 to 120 degrees Celsius. Normally, I would prefer the metallic probe between 100 to 105 degrees Celsius. Leads to thermal destruction of the cervical tissue, and the depth of destruction exceeds 4 mm after 30 seconds of cold coagulation, and it reaches around 7 mm after 45 seconds of cold coagulation. So the equipment required for cold coagulation includes a SEM cold coagulator manufactured by a German manufacturer and a metallic cervical probe. The cervical probe is an ectocervical probe. The dimension of the ectocervical probe is 1 cm, and the wires for electrical connection. And if a colposcope is available, you know, one can do the cold coagulation under colposcopic control. But if a colposcopic control is not available, then one can use the naked eye to direct treatment using acetic acid and Lugalcidin. And of course, a cervical speculum to expose the cervix and a halogen light source to see the cervix and a gynecological couch where the woman could be comfortably placed in a modified lithotomy position to expose the cervix and carry out treatment. So this is the picture of the cold coagulator. This is a very light equipment, measures about 2 kilograms. It can be easily carried around, so it is feasible to carry this equipment to the field settings and to provide treatment. And this is connected with electricity. And when you on the machine, there is a digital display, and there is a knob on the front of the machine which can be moved clockwise to increase the temperature to which the metallic probe is heated. So as you see here, the digital display shows 100 degrees Celsius. So the knob is kept in appropriate position to ensure the probe is heated to 100 degrees Celsius. And this heated probe is taken to the cervix and applied on the cervix to carry out the cold coagulation. In fact, an application should be given for about 45 seconds for satisfactory treatment. So the consumables required for cold coagulation include a cotton swab to apply 5% acetic acid and Lugol side in so that the lesion is delineated. One can see the entire transformation zone clearly. And then, of course, you need electricity to operate the machine and the light source. So the procedure, the patient is kept in a lithotomy position, cervix is adequately exposed, and then the squamocolumnar junction is traced, and one can delineate the lesion by applying 5% acetic acid and then Lugol side in so that the lesion is clearly visible. And if, as I already said, if a colposcopy is available, you know, you can use the colposcopic control visualization for treatment. And set the cold coagulator at 100 degrees Celsius and apply the probe on the cervix and heat the cervix for about 45 seconds at 100 degrees Celsius. If the lesion is large or if the transformation zone is large and a single application won't cover the entire transformation zone or the lesion, then one should apply the probe repeatedly in the same sitting, overlapping applications. In our experience, about 60% of the transformation zones can be treated with a single application. About 30% would require two applications. And rarely you may require three or four applications. The applications can be overlapping. There is no problem at all. And as I said already, more than 90% of the lesions would require only one or two applications in the same setting, overlapping applications. There's absolutely no problem. Now, we will watch a video presentation of the entire treatment for your understanding. So you can see the cervix exposed. You can see the entire squamocolumnar junction very well. So the transformation zone is a type 1 transformation zone. And we have applied acetic acid. You can see the lesion on the upper lip. At 12 o'clock position, now we have applied Lugol side in. You can see the lesion even more clearly at 12 o'clock position. Histologically, it was a CAN2 disease. So the cold coagulation probe is now applied. You can see it is heating. It covers the entire transformation zone. So only one application is required. 45 seconds is over. The treatment is over. It has covered the entire transformation zone here. So one single application is required in such a situation. So after treatment, you remove the speculum, you reassure the woman. And as you see here, there's no requirement for local anesthesia. So after treatment, one should give certain post-treatment instructions. We should advise the woman on what symptoms one can expect. There could be some mild cramps, bloodstained watery discharge for a week or so, and one can use sanitary pads to prevent secretions from staining their clothes. But women should be advised to avoid sexual intercourse for 4 weeks from treatment, and they should not use vaginal tampon or douche. And if they cannot avoid sexual intercourse, condoms should be provided. And you may encourage women to come after 4 weeks to see whether the wound has healed. But a mandatory follow-up examination after 12 months is essential to ensure the lesion has totally healed. There is no residual or recurrent lesion. You should also advise women to report back immediately if they have fever for more than 2 days, if they have excessive foul-smelling purulent discharge for more than 3 days, if they experience very severe lower abdominal pain or cramps, or if they have bleeding for more than 2 days. So if any one of these symptoms occur within 4 weeks from treatment, they should be asked to come back and report to the doctor. Then, as I said earlier, you know, one may encourage women to come after 4 weeks from treatment just to see them and look at the cervix to ensure the wound has healed. In most women, the wound heals by 2 to 3 weeks. But a follow-up visit at 12 months, preferably at 12 months, but if someone reports at 6 months, 7 months, it is okay, but preferably at 12 months to ensure the lesion has healed. So at that time, If a pap smear is available, one can do pap smear. If HPV testing is available, it's even better. One can do a HPV testing and see whether there is, but the woman is HPV test positive. One may do a VIA and VILI. This is also quite good if there is no pap smear available or it is not feasible. If there is no HPV testing available or it is not feasible, one can rely essentially on VIA and VILI, which is visual inspection with acetic acid and glucosidone. And if there is colposcope available, one can do colposcopy. And if VIA or VILI are positive or there are colposcopic abnormalities, one may direct biopsies. And if no lesion is visible, if you want to be doubly sure, one can direct the biopsy at the original site of the lesion. And if there is any evidence of residual or recurrent disease, one may repeat treatment with cold coagulation if all the indications are met, that is type 1 transformation zone, the entire stomatal junction is visible, or if it is a larger lesion, one can go for excision methods of treatment like LEAP. So the advantages of cold coagulation, it's a light equipment, easy portability, easy sterilization. In fact, after use, the cold coagulation probe is cleaned very well with water and all the biological debris are removed and it is wiped with a dry cotton and then heat the probe for another 45 seconds at 110 or 115, 120 degrees Celsius and it is ready for reuse. There is less treatment time. So the treatment time is for each application 45 seconds. If you apply two applications, 90 seconds. If you apply three applications, it is 1 minute, 35 seconds. It uses electricity as a treatment agent. There's no need for local anesthesia. And if there is an intrauterine contraceptive device, you can just push the thread inside and with the IUCD in situ, one can do the treatment. There's no need to remove it. There is no noise from the machine. There is no smoke coming out. There is no smell of burning tissue during treatment. And tolerable discomfort. And it is a safe, effective, acceptable treatment. The side effects and complications are extremely rare. Some women may complain, less than 10% may complain some mild pain during treatment. And vasovagal reactions like fainting, giddiness and mild cramps are extremely rare. And fainting happens if one inadvertently heats the endocervical tissue. So we always advise use only one type of cold coagulation probe, that is the ectocervical probe. And if there's a careless application with the heated probe, one can cause vaginal burns. Bleeding is extremely rare. And we often advocate wherever there is facilities for histopathology, direct a biopsy before treatment. So that sometimes, very rarely after treatment, there may be some bleeding from the biopsy site. So what we advise is if you direct a biopsy before treatment, make the woman wait for about an hour after treatment in the clinic. And then ensure there is no bleeding and send her back home. Pelvic inflammatory disease is extremely rare. We have never come across such a situation. True cervical stenosis is also rare and in our experience vasovagal veins and cervical bleeding are very rare again. Effectiveness in large series of cases with CIN3, which is, you know, I would say the true precursor lesion for cervical cancer. Investigators like Dungan in Scotland have reported 95% cure rate. And 96.5% cure rate among women with CIN2 disease. Fairly large numbers of women here in this series, you see. And about 97% cure rate among CIN1 with single application. And in fact, very recently, we have started using cold coagulation in our African and Indian studies because, you know, with the cryotherapy, maintaining a gas supply chain is difficult and gas is expensive. So we find this is well tolerated, cold coagulation is well tolerated, accepted by women, and there is less treatment time, so more treatment turnover. So in a field clinic, one can easily treat 20, 30, 40 patients a day. And the movement with the machine is so easy because it is easily portable. But if any one of you plan to use cold coagulation in your field programs, I would advise you to carefully document the treatment details and follow these women 1 year from treatment and establish the lesion resolution frequency in your own series and document side effects and complications so that you learn by your own experience. Thank you very much for your attention.